Grand Rising, Grand Rising, kings, queens, gods, goddesses, thank you for showing up for another episode of That White Girl. I'm Kimberly Michael, the host, and I know it's been a minute, but I'm back. I have the grand honor of having not only a guest, but a very good friend now, I consider him, on the show. His name is Ron McKeithen. Ronald McKeithen, aka Ron. And he's got quite the journey. So we've been talking about doing this for a couple weeks, and here we finally are. Thanks for showing up, Ronald McKeithen.
Thank you for having me.
I appreciate you giving me time on this platform for this particular subject, I mean, which is really kind of yours in its own. So let me tell everybody how I ran across you. As most of my guests know and most of my followers know, I don't own a TV, so I don't really pay attention to news and things like that, but I was on somebody's Facebook page. I had went down the rabbit hole on Facebook and ran across an article. It wasn't even an article. It was a lady talking about Ron McKeithen and his journey and what had happened. And she tagged him in the post, and I was like, wow, that's a unbelievable story. And I hit him up, and that was that. So we're now friends. I mean, I would say so. We're friends. And he's got, you know, quite the journey to tell. So I will let him actually now tell his journey, because I haven't mentioned it on purpose. So where would you start if someone said, if someone was introducing you and they didn't know you and nobody said who you were, where would you start this at?
Well, if I want to start at the beginning, I would go back to 9 years old when I first started, I don't know, hanging with the wrong crowd, but that's when that journey really began back then. Because that's when I started numbing my brain with weed.
At nine?
Yeah, at nine. I remember smoking right in front of Washington School behind the house, across the street.
Yeah. Where did you grow up?
Titusville,
which is a suburb of
Birmingham,
Alabama, which is
they
where
call
we
it
are.
Titusville, but most of us that live there, we said Titusville,
which is kind of funny to me because there's a Titusville in Florida. So, 9 years old, smoking pot, which is unbelievable to me, but I'm sure it's a lot of people's journey, and started doing shit shouldn't be doing,
yeah,
hanging out with people you shouldn't be hanging out with.
I was mostly. Most of the guys I was hanging around is like older than me, 11, 12 or whatever. But I don't know, at that age, I was just bold. You know, we was doing a lot of crazy shit, like breaking in parking, stealing cars, stuff like that. At 12, I ended up going to Alabama Boys Industrial School. That sends me that. By then, I'd probably been a juvenile maybe 7, 8, 9, 10 times, I'm not sure. I was at boys' school for, I think it was less than a year. I was out of trouble until I turned 18. And things just started happening. I don't know. I don't know if it was the pressure from the home, family environment. I don't know, but things just started happening. It wasn't pleasant.
And at the end of that journey, you ended up where?
In prison. Between 82, 83, those 3 years, my whole life just changed. And I just started going to jail. I started doing things that I wasn't usually doing. Better yet, I just started hanging with the wrong crowd that took my sense of entitlement to another level. You know? And I just started going to prison. Before I knew it, I was sentenced to life without parole for robbery. on that Bitch Offenders Act. They used three prize of other three prize that I had. A burglary and two credit cards. Third degrees. And I was sentenced to life without parole, and I've done 37 years. Haven't killed anyone.
Didn't harm anybody?
First degree robbery is a violent offense. But what a lot of people don't know, people get charged with first degree robbery and get this among the sinners, but they may point a gun at them, but they didn't attack them, didn't hurt them, didn't hit them. Just, hey, give them the money. Okay, go over there, sit down. Don't sit until I leave.
Right.
You know?
Not that that's right by any means.
But yeah, but it's a different consider.
Right.
You know? But they didn't consider that with me. I don't think they care. Because at the time, it was trying to be tough on crime. But,
right.
You know, and that just...
It was the 80s, yeah, and...
Three-strike law.
I mean, you're a brother. I mean, there's that, so...
Yeah.
I mean...
And it was thousands. I'm talking about thousands of us in there.
Wow.
In different prisons. It was like a... If you ever go to where they raise cows, and you see these different pens, where they have different pens of cows, where they sell cows or slaughter them, but let's say they wasn't going to auction them off. And you see these different pens of different kind of cows.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what prison seemed like. Just different pens of different cows. And each cow is a commodity. And that what they're using us for, and now it's a commodity. Packed in that. We were packed in that.
And I would I'm not assuming, because I've seen the numbers, and it's evident now, especially with, you know, as much as everything is looked at, that, you know, the ratio and the statistics and all of these things. So there had to be other brothers in there. I mean, let me ask you this first. Let me back up and say, when you got life, when they gave you life, when they said that to you, did you understand the injustice of it? Or in that moment, did you think, this makes sense because I've been in and out of prison? Or did you know it was fucked up then? Did you know it was fucked up?
For one, no, I knew I should have received it. At the time, because I was shocked. Second, I didn't really comprehend what it was. You know, life without parole. You know, that's, you know, you should be able to comprehend that. But my mind was like, I'm still going to get out. You know, I didn't realize that I would actually probably die there until about maybe 10 years later. I didn't accept it, because I was living this fantasy that something's going to happen. I'm going to file something, because I could see the injustice and the laws and the violations, but they weren't paying no attention to that. They saw it too, but like, oh, we don't care. You know? You ain't got a lawyer. We can just deny that. I mean, there's one petition. I filed a petition for a Kirby petition. And the DA, who was having the case, in his response, he said that I had a rape case. He put it in bold black letters. When I read it, I'm like, I'm thinking just a typo.
Right.
You know, just got to be a typo, because my record, I don't have nothing like that in
there. Right.
But I didn't understand until I talked to my lawyer that he deliberately did that. So when the judge see it, she ain't gonna say another rape on her. Just throw it to the side. You know?
Wow.
Not finna take the time to call and ask about it. You know?
Right.
No, rape on. And I'm talking about, it was like in bold black letters. Two different places, like something there, but that for some reason they put that in bold black letters with some of the other stuff. I'm like, I'm thinking it was a typo, but it wasn't.
And you ended up being in there for 37 years.
Yeah.
Is that accurate? 37 exactly. Years later.
No, really 38.
38 years later. By some freak accident. So before we move up to present time, was there ever a time when you attempted, like at some point go, okay, this, not only is it injustice and now you've woken up to the fact that you're in here and you may possibly die behind bars. Did you attempt to fight to get out?
I filed so many petitions that they hit me with excessive petitions. You know, because when you file it too many times, and even if you got juice or don't, one of the things is saying like, hey, we denied this dude over and over, excessive petition, he's just wasting the court's time, money, you know?
Right.
And so I know in one of my responses, I got a full page where they were saying that accused me of excessive petition. But I've had some of the best jailhouse lawyers file for me, and even I done filed. But I had never even got you know, the thing when you file, you get evidence from a hearing.
Right.
I never received the evidence of a hearing, never was appointed a lawyer. The first lawyer I ever met was Carla Crowder. The last lawyer I met was when I got sentenced. And so for 37 years, I had not even talked to a lawyer.
Wow.
You know?
That's ridiculous.
Yeah, it is.
I mean, unbelievably ridiculous.
Because it didn't make no sense to call a lawyer or a law firm or whatever because I didn't have any money.
Right.
So I had to file. And when you file, it's the court supposed to assign you.
Right.
A court, you know, a lawyer. For evidence hearing or whatever.
Right.
Ask questions, but they didn't do me not once. Never did it.
And so literally you filed in vain. I mean, basically. You yeah. just were just wasting paper, basically. Yeah. Right,
sometimes I file just because I just got tired of just not doing nothing. You want to do something. If you don't fight in some form or fashion to get your freedom, it'd be like you've given up. And so I'm just sitting, I want to get out. Okay, what am I doing? Okay, let me file something. Let me ask, okay, what's the last thing you filed? Some brother like blah, blah, blah. Okay, I'm finna try that. Let me see you on the gun. I'm finna hook it up where it looked just like mine.
Right.
And then I'm gonna file it because I just can't sit and give me something to hope for. You know?
Is that how other people are doing it? They're just by the fucking, like, yeah. Hey, what did you do? And
yeah.
I mean, basically, everybody in there is an attorney and they're. Yeah.
If,
you know what I mean?
Like, right now, guys want, that's what I forgot. I got someone want a copy of my the order that the judge filed because that's the only thing he doesn't have. And, like, this guy's in, like, say, with the first curve I filed. I got another guy's curve that was successful.
Right.
And did my own thing with it, but they denied it.
They What's
said
the
they
guy?
Did, no, they did not. They said that I had quit, dropped out of the crime bill after 30 days. Well, that was a lie. They put me out of the crime bill because I threatened to kill a dude. And but then it was about six of us threatened to kill a dude. So, but they just put me out because they believed me. I don't know why, but I don't know what they got put out. You know.
That's unbelievable to me because we've had this conversation. You're probably, I don't know how you're going to feel about me saying this, but I said something about, you said you were gentle, but you are, like, you're a very gentle person. So I'm not saying that, you know, you wouldn't choke the shit out of somebody. I'm just saying, like, you don't come across that way. So it's odd to me that they would pick you of all the people to be like, okay, they believed you.
I'm a meditator. No, I wasn't meditating. I wasn't meditating.
Back then?
No. I wasn't nice back then. But I'm a meditator. And yes, I am. I've calmed down. I'm a nice person. I give it a treat everybody with respect. And if you want to use the word gentle, I don't know. I say I'm like, you know, I'm gentle. I don't know. That's
kind of gentle. You're like a gentle giant.
No, that's that G word.
You're like a gentle giant.
Okay,
I'm sorry. Well, he's very masculinely gentle.
Okay. Next question.
So, well, let's talk about the meditation. And I say that because I'm not a meditator, and I would like to, and I am working on it. It is definitely something that's at the forefront of what I'm doing, but. So it's not like meditation is new. It's not like people don't know about it. But when you told me about the meditation stuff and how you got into it and what the requirements, maybe, I don't remember, but how did it start that you started the meditation? Because there's a lot of interesting facts around the meditation at your facility.
Well, the kind of meditation we're doing is called Vipassana. And it's nothing extraordinary about it. It's been going on for a long time. I can't get into the dynamics of it because I never take my time to learn those different words that mm-hmm. you can explain certain things. But to put it in layman's term, we would clear the gym, rearrange it, so we would have a meditating area and a sleeping area and an eating area. And after we got that arranged, you would pick like maybe 32 guys, no more than 32 guys to come in, which have agreed to like stay in there for 10 days. Do not talk to anyone. Don't even like just bump. If you bump into somebody and say, excuse me, that can get you put out. You know? And really acts like it's a, like the environment is like a monk, like Monksville. Really supposed to walk around looking down, don't make no eye contact. And we would do that for 10 days straight. Just locked away from the prison in that gym for 10 days straight. And most guys, you would have like, I've seen as many as 10 leave the first and second day. You know, I mean, you, I mean wow. not the first day, because they would spend that night and go and eat their little food. But the next day, it's like seeing, you know, imagine a parking lot, because that's how the beds are, how a parking lot be filled.
Right.
And then all of a sudden, it's like time to get off and how to, you know, the car start to leave, and how you see those empty spots. Mm-hmm. That's how it is. The first day, it's full, everybody there. By day six, it's like a half of an empty parking lot, because guys cannot sit down and don't be distracted. They've got to be, they look for distractions to keep them from thinking about what's really going on in their head and their heart. Mm-hmm. And so now, if you're in this gym, nobody's talking to you, doing anything, you got to sit there and think. Your mind going to start doing things, you can't stop it. And what the meditation does is teaches you how to control that by just focusing on the air that's coming from your nose to your lips. And so when anything, if say something comes up that's painful, you know, it teaches you not to run away from it, or just push it away, to just analyze and just slide it to the sides. Even something, a beautiful thought can come. You don't want to get caught up in that beautiful thought. That'll be like floating away and just forget about what you're doing. No, mm-hmm. You want to do the same thing to that. Just analyze and push it aside and just focus on this. Mm-hmm. And I've done it. I went in that gym and did 10 days, 10 times, you know. And every time I done went, I wanted to leave. I wanted to quit. I done said I was going to leave the next day because it's just that hard, but just something in me determined. I just can't get fucked like that.
Yeah, 10 days. I mean, that's, you know, phenomenal. And at the time when you started this, there wasn't very many prisons doing this meditation?
No, Donaldson is the only prison in the United States that was doing Vipassana the way we do. The only prison in the United States.
And how long ago was that? About how long ago
it
did that?
It started like in 90, was it 90? No, I'm not sure. I came back there and no, I think it started in 2000. I'm not sure. I can remember the date. I'm not
good. So you've been meditating for 20 years, like hardcore?
No. I know for like 10 at the most. All right. Let's say the last 11, 12 years. I'm not sure.
Okay.
But I've been doing it.
Let's say that.
I'm the type of person where it's too much energy trying to keep up with all that shit. You know? And so, I don't remember how long, but I know it's been about 10. I've done 10 3-days. That's not counting. I've done 10-day courses. That's not counting 3-day courses, because we have 3-day courses too.
Mm-hmm. Same thing, quiet time.
Same thing, 3 days.
No talking. I mean, I considered a quiet retreat.
Five times a year.
Wow. Yeah, I considered like a weekend quiet retreat. I've considered that more so lately than ever. I don't know if I could do it. I mean, you've met me, so but I have considered it.
Do I think you can do it?
No, I'm not asking you that question. I'm just saying you met me, so you got to know how probably very challenging it would be for me to do 3 days of quiet.
It's all right to quit the first time, you know. It's all right to quit the second time. But the thing is that you made decisions, at least try. And then once you get it now, you're going to get the information you need. Mm-hmm. It's like, it just will give you a tool.
Right.
And it will explain to you how to work that tool. Right. If you choose not to work that tool, that's on you. Right. But then you'll still have that tool there to use when you want to use it.
Right.
So, it ain't no thing. And what I think Wicca says, it's not for the weak mind.
Mm.
Nah, but let me explain. I'm not saying you're weak mind.
Right.
You know, what they're saying is that it's not for those that doesn't have that determination, that because you got to have a determination at certain levels, you know. And so if you don't have it at a certain level, okay, it's gonna be weak. But if you got a pill, okay, that turns this week, and you're going to be able to, like, deal with it. But you should try.
I mean, it was, someone recently said to me that he just came out the blue and said, you know, I think you need to do 5 minutes, and he was like, a day, and
5 minutes of what?
5 minutes of meditation a day for 7 days, and he said it would change my life. He said, just take 5 minutes, because I've never meditated. I've literally never meditated. I mean, I have. Let me take that back. But it's been very, I don't want to say orchestrated, but I'm going to say orchestrated. In other words, like I put on a YouTube video and it talks me through it kind of thing. And so the other day, I have like this meditation video that somebody made for me, not video, but audio. And so I had that on and I did 5 minutes. I got up early. I didn't talk to anybody. I didn't look at my phone. I just put the meditation music on, and it wasn't the talking one that I used to do. But anyway, my point is I only did it the one time and I didn't do it again. And that day, it was a rough day for me that day. It was really strange. It was definitely like, it opened up more than I was expecting it to kind of calm me down, but it did the opposite. I had more thoughts that day. I feel like I had way more thoughts going through my head. I'm not saying good, bad, or indifferent. I'm just saying that's, it felt like it opened up instead of what I anticipated it to do. So I didn't do it the next day is my point. So I am going to do it. I'm not going to try, because trying's not doing. So I am going to do it. But with that being said, that wasn't your only adventure, right? Like, if you want to call it that. You dabbled in a million things while you were there, right?
One of the negative aspects of being poor and raised in poverty is that your family don't have the money to investigate whatever potential you might have. You say at home or Brookwood or Stadium, you see a lot of kids going to ballets, musicals, softball, kids' softball games, soccer, or everything, you know, because their parents got the money to do that. In the hood, they ain't got that money. And so you can throw a basketball or a football, you know, but say when it comes to arts, crafts, or say when it comes to mechanics, or say when it comes to calculus, things like that. I didn't realize my potentials until I got to prison. I think the first thing was wood. It was these wooden Bibles we used to make. And I saw a guy make one. And I like, man, my grandma would love that. So I wanted to ask him, like, hey man, teach me how to make that. He said, you're going to charge me. He was going to charge me. I can't remember what it was, but whatever it was like, it kind of like, I'm like, it pissed me off. Because this same guy been smoking my cigarettes and drinking my coffee. I didn't ask him to make me nothing. I asked him to teach me, you know. I said, no, this is all good. But I started watching some other guys. A guy around here was making something. He got a design and just started, like, watching both of them. I took some wood to myself and came out with two that looked better than his. And so I just started, you know, messing with wood. It got to the point where I would make me make it, like, 12 at a time. I don't like making like one thing. I like, for me to make a profit, I got to make at least 4, 5, 6. And so I would have like 12 at a time that I'm working on. And I went to another prison store working with leather. I was making all kind of leather pocketbooks. We would duplicate a pocketbook. You know? Sometimes we can't get the exact, you know, we would duplicate. And I want to learn from the best. Because this one guy, and his stitching was so smooth and tight, where that's who I would watch. And I started getting good at it, but then I got C-54. That's what they call it, C-54. C-51, no, C-51. They sent me away from the prison. I was a tutor in the college there, in the honor dorm. But they was upset at me because we had filed a petition on them. I was in the Nation of Islam at the time. We filed a petition on them, on some things he was doing. And what they did, they separated us.
Wow. So more injustice in the midst of it. They separated the group that filed the petition?
Yeah, well.
Wow.
First, they separated like maybe four of them. Me and another guy was the only one left. The reason they got me because they sent me some legal mail of some copies of the papers of some, the suit that I needed to sign. Mm-hmm. Some more papers to sign. And it had on the envelope that inmate to inmate mail, I can't get it. And then it also had that scratched out and said, no, I'll give it to them. And I'll ship the next day.
Wow. So, you did as much as you could. Whatever that you were interested in, I guess, right? Classes and...
I didn't start getting interested in classes, like going to a number of classes till I got to Donaldson. Now, I was at St. Clair. I was a tutor in the college.
Right.
But being a tutor in the college is different than taking classes. Well, no. At first, I was taking academic courses there. And then... They killed it. They said that inmates with life without parole shouldn't be taking college courses, so they killed it. And so I started tutoring. And when I came to Donaldson, that's when I started taking these classes, because those classes wasn't been offered at St. Clair. They was offered at Donaldson. Mm-hmm. So.
Wow, they said that. I mean, there's part of me that almost gets it, but there's part of me that doesn't. Like, they said that people that have life without parole shouldn't be able to attend classes or have access to the classes.
Because they're saying you're going to die.
Well,
it's like saying, why should I feed you your last meal if I'm going to kill you anyway? You know? What's that?
I mean, it's just another atrocity to me, I feel like. I mean, it is, so... But you said, and I don't want to speak for you, but you said earlier that you didn't even really know who you were until you got to prison.
No. No. I knew who I was. Or at least I had a little cloud in my mind at the time. But mm-hmm. I didn't know about my potentials.
Right.
You know, I recognized that I was a crazy young black man. But I didn't know my capabilities. I didn't know that I had options.
Right.
The only tools I was accepting at the time, or rather that was being given to me, mm-hmm. was how to survive on the streets. Mm. You know, not how to go to college or make it to college. Or
right.
How to study and get this and that. No.
Right.
I don't think college was even spoken in our house.
Well. So, how long has it been? December... 16th? Yeah, December 20th?
No, December 16th.
That's December 16th. You got out.
Right.
You walked out of prison after 37 years. Right? And so we're going to do a part two, you guys. We're going to talk about after, or since he's been out, I should say, in present time, and what he's doing, what he has going on, because it is so much, you guys. He's so talented and so gifted and so brilliant, and he does so many different things. When I publish this, he has a GoFundMe page as well too. So feel free to look that up. I'll post the link when I publish this. And you know, I just want to say thank you. I mean, I know we've talked about this for, like I said, a couple of weeks. I appreciate you taking the time and sharing your story. I know that this is old news to you. You've told your story a million times since you've been out. So I appreciate you telling it one more time to me and to, you know, my followers.
I appreciate you.
I'm really grateful that you're in my life. The gratitude that you have and that you show for the most, you know, smallest of things. Can keep anybody around you, you know, in a different place in their life, as well it should. So thank you, not just for being here, but for being my friend. And, you know, I look forward to a second interview and to see how just magnificent you become now that you're free. I thank everyone who showed up and took the time to listen. Y'all know how I feel about you. I love y'all. I believe in y'all. And I'll see you next time. Peace.